This podcast is general in nature and hasn't taken your circumstances into account. It's important you consider your personal circumstances and speak to a financial advisor before deciding what's right for you. Any general tax information provided is provided as a guide only. Now, here's Shane and Deanna.
G'day everyone. And hey Deanna.
Hello Shane.
This week we got some... G'day there. This week we got some pretty good news on inflation, I reckon. I must admit I was a bit fearful we'd see a bit of a bounce in February, but we didn't. So I was just wondering what you made of those inflation figures. Are they the good news that I'm thinking they are?
Well, it looks that way if you look at annual inflation, which is the best way to look at the monthly CPI index because it can be quite volatile month by month. You get a lot of seasonal issues that go on. So over the year to February, annual inflation's at running at 3.4%, and it's been at that level now for 3 months. And over the past 2 months, it's been coming in below the Reserve Bank's own forecast. So for the March quarter, since we now have 2 out of the 3 months worth of data, it looks like headline inflation's going to come in at about 0.5% over the quarter, which is a pretty good outcome. If you do a 6 month annualized sum on that, I know economists like to talk in those terms, but it is quite helpful to see the momentum and the change in inflation, that's now running at like something like 2.2% if our forecast is right. So at the bottom end of the RBA's target band. I mean, some of the components weren't as favourable as the headline figures for the February data. If you look at things like the trimmed mean, that actually went up from 3.8% to 3.9%, but it is still trending down over the past few months.
Yeah, and how do you think the Reserve Bank will look at this? In the last week, we've seen this debate about the upcoming minimum wage and award wage increases. We've got the union movement asking for another hefty rise. We've got government talking about a rise equal to inflation. We've got business saying, no, it should be much less than that. How do you think the RBA would see all of that? And what do you think that they would make of these inflation numbers? Is it still consistent with our view that around mid-year or maybe August we'll see a rate cut?
Well, in terms of the actual inflation figures, I think the Reserve Bank will be quite happy with those outcomes. I mean, the wage issues around potential minimum wage and award wage rises in line with inflation, say at 3.5% or 4%, are still quite high, but not as high as last year. Last year, we had award wages running at 5.75%. Well, that was the increase that was awarded, and the minimum wage was even higher than that. So if you look at things on a year-on-year basis, those decisions for the minimum wage and award wage decision should be negative for the pace of wages growth this year.
So simply because they're lower than
they were
last year.
Yeah, that's right. So I think our...
I think you, on your calcs, minimum wage people is about less than 1% of the workforce and the award is about 22% or 21% or something like that.
I guess the risk is that if the award wage increase or even the minimum wage increase is then higher than we expect, something like 4%, I think that that's still elevated because it might send the signalling effect like it did last year to people on EBAs or even on individual agreements that they may request higher wage increases. I mean, they may not get them because the labour market is probably going to soften. But I think that our view at the moment that we'll see a rate cut in June, I mean, it could be delayed to August. I am a little bit nervous about that because while inflation's coming down, I don't know if the RBA really feels like they're in a rush right now to cut rates, especially if the unemployment rate, you know, stays at 3.7% like it did for the February figures. I was also a little bit surprised this month in the data to see that the Taylor Swift effect wasn't as high as a lot of people were thinking or fearing that it might be. I mean, I remember you speaking about the T-Swift effect last year when a lot of media was getting excited about it. What did you make of it in today's figures?
Well, to be honest with you, it looked like a bit of a non-event. Even the ABS made a reference to it, which I thought was nice. I mean, it was a big event. It was the biggest concert tour in Australia's history. But, you know, when you look at the numbers, I think travel and accommodation costs went down more than 9% in the month. So that's quite a hefty fall. So they pointed out that, yes, there was a boost to hotel and hotel costs basically in Sydney and Melbourne, but it was more than swamped by the end of school holiday effect right around Australia. So, yes, there probably was an impact there, but it looked like it was a pretty minor one.
We had a chart in the note that we sent out after inflation that if you're looking at the video on this, you can see it come up now. You can still see that services inflation is still running ahead of goods prices. So I guess that that's something that we just need to watch in the next few months. We really want to see a slowing in services prices, but we may not get it on rents, I don't think. What do you think, Shane?
Look, I've always sort of been of the view that goods led on the way up and they're going to lead on the way down, and ultimately services inflation will slow as the labour market cools. But by the same token, when the Reserve Bank looks at that chart, they'll say, well, we've got a ways to go yet. And so that will keep them cautious, at least for the May meeting. Hopefully by the June meeting, they'll be okay to cut rates. But I would agree with you, there is a high risk that that gets delayed till August. Or September or thereabouts. But I think whichever way you cut it, we are on track for rate cuts. It's just a debate as to when that occurs. We're on the optimistic side. I guess others are on the pessimistic side. This week's inflation numbers arguably supports the optimists. But, of course, these numbers can bounce around a bit.
And you wrote an interesting note this week, Shane, about some of the long COVID impacts. I know you've been a bit obsessed with COVID charts and looking at them. So it's kind of good to me that we don't really track that daily COVID numbers anymore. But there have been some long-term impacts from COVID, especially on inflation. So can you just run through what you think are some of the key long COVID effects on the economy?
It's funny, when I told Diana this week I was going to write a note on COVID or the legacy of COVID, the lasting effects of COVID, she said, oh, your favourite topic, because she's remembering back to a few years ago when I was obsessed with collecting COVID stats. I reckon for me it was sort of like a kind of a nice thing in a way, because it was the tail end of the years when I had my kids at home and I got a few extra years with them as a result of COVID. But, yeah, they would say it wasn't such a good thing. They would say, it's all right for you, Dad, not so good for us. But I think it is having a lasting effect. It's like when you're in a room and you shout and your sound reverberates around the room, COVID is having that same effect. I pointed out that there were seven key lasting effects. You know, one is bigger government. We went through the GFC. We went through the pandemic. Government expanded its role in both of those, protected Australians through that period. And I think that expectation is there that they will be protected again going forward. And it has ushered in a more regulatory environment, more intervention by governments to do this and that. We're back to where we were in the past. You know, government seems to be the solution to everything. Yeah. That worries me a little bit. We do see a tighter labour market than we had pre-pandemic. Hasn't quite gone back to normal.
But doesn't that seem strange? Like, what's actually changed in the labour market that all of a sudden all these businesses need extra workers and they can't find them? I still think it's a bit of a conundrum.
It is a bit of a conundrum. Some people say that businesses are so scared of running out of workers like they did at the tail end of the pandemic. They couldn't get the workers that they're hoarding. And maybe there's an element of that. We know that there is an aging population. A lot of baby boomers will retire and you're going to have less workers per consumers in the economy or per retirees. And that's obviously an issue, perhaps worrying companies as well. But then flip side to all of that is that artificial intelligence is coming along, which arguably should free up labour resources to some degree. So that is a bit of a conundrum. And I suspect that maybe that one might be one of the least lasting effects of COVID. But you've also got an effect of, we've got a more fragmented world. The government keeps telling us this one. It's pretty obvious out there. For greater focus on nationalism, that was a trend around beforehand. Of course, geopolitical tensions have heightened as a result of the pandemic. Again, that trend was there before, but it's given all these things a push along. And the outworking, of course, has been a somewhat more inflation-prone world. So we're seeing a cyclical downswing in inflation now as the stimulus was removed, but we're probably in a world which is somewhat more inflation-prone than pre-pandemic. We're also seeing work from home. You know, the fact that we're recording this podcast the way we are has been made possible by, or we've been become a lot more familiar with this technology, a lot more people using it, therefore people doing meetings on Teams, not traveling as much for business and so on. And I guess the final effect is a faster take up of technology. Hopefully I've gone through seven themes through there. You could argue some are negative, perhaps a more inflation prone world, perhaps less productivity associated with more government intervention in the economy. But by the same token, you know, we have to admit the world has come through this rough period in far better shape than might have been feared when we went into those lockdowns and people were really fearful at the time, we've got share markets at or around record highs. We are seeing the faster take-up of technology, which is something of a positive. And, of course, we've got artificial intelligence coming along now. So it hasn't all been negative, even though at times you might think, well, this is all still a bit of a downer.
Well, it's a really good note. And if anyone wants to access it, you can find it on the AMP Insights Hub, because I think it's very interesting how, you know, one event can have all these flow-on effects to the Australian and the global economy.
It's a bit of a reminder of the so-called butterfly effect that used to be referred to in relation to chaos theory, that a butterfly flaps its wings in Brazil and then the rest of the world is affected by.
But yeah, of course, there was a movie on that with Ashton Kutcher.
I think there was. About 40 years ago, chaos theory was all the rage, and then it finally showed up in that movie. But of course, this was a much broader based thing. But it almost seems as if we talk about a post-COVID world and the pre-COVID world, much like people after the end of World War II said there was pre-war and post-war sort of thing, and that seems to be a bit of a thing going on.
Mm, sure.
Just one other thing before we go. This is Easter. One of the shocking things you may be starting to read about is the massive rise in coca prices, basic ingredient.
Yeah, well, I kind of felt that after going to Haig's and buying my kids and my two nieces eggs and spending about $80 and only buying, I think about six big eggs for them. So I have to stock up on my Cadbury to kind of offset the Haig's.
That's probably important. Just to look at those coca prices, they've gone up something like almost 300% or threefold over the course of the last year. The coca price has gone from about $2,700 a ton US, that's a ton, to now about $9,700 a ton. So pretty huge increase there. It's been put down to supply shortages flowing from El Nino adversely affecting Africa, firstly in very dry conditions. Then they had heavy rains, pests, cost of pesticides gone up. So all sorts of factors affecting that. One thought that I had, I'm not that much of a chocoholic. I do have a little bit over Easter, but I know I've often gone to people who are really into health and they say, well, you're better off being a savoury person than a sugary person, because sugar people tend to get more affected by diabetes, whereas if you're a savoury person into the Arnott shape or the twisties or something, then yes, you do have risk if you get too much of the fat out of those things, but overall it's better for your body than all the sugar.
Yeah, but then some of the studies show that the dark chocolate's good for your endorphins and good for your oxytocin. So
That's true.
Just take that into account.
antioxidants in there in the dark chocolate. So whenever I see the chance, I'll buy the dark chocolate over the milk chocolate, which tends to have more sugar in it. So valid tale tips. I bet you were thinking you weren't going to get that today out of this podcast, but I think that's a wrap. See you, Deanna.
See you, Shane.
See you, everyone.
For more info on Shane and Deanna's podcasts and reports, head to the Insights Hub at amp.com.au.